everybody, welcome to the Aggressive Progressive. It's been forever since we did an Aggressive Progressive. We need to have that music louder at the beginning. You need to crank it up in here. I got to feel it. There it is. All right. Thank you, Bart. All right, we have a jam-packed, power-packed show for you today. So you know how this works. The first 15 minutes, we go out live free. After 15 minutes, we make a jump to the members-only section. So if you want to become a member, go to tytnetwork.com/join. You see the whole show. You get all the stuff. And then we put clips of this show up on the main channel on the weekend. Okay, so here we go. Let's get it. I got some great guests this week with me. Right here is, of course, the miserable liberal, Steph Zamorano. Hello, Steph. How are you?
I'm miserable.
And one of my favorite progressive writers is here. He wrote a great book called Chain of Title, which is an award-winning book, won awards. And it's all about how the government screwed us over in the mortgage scam. It's Dave Dayan is here, ladies and gentlemen. Dave Dayan, how are you, buddy?
Thank you for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for making time to come down to the studio. It's a big thrill to have you here. And we're going to talk about your most recent article that you wrote for The Intercept. And it has all to do with the single-payer debate that's happening in California right now. Now, California is the sixth largest economy in the world, and we still don't have single payer. And our Democratic legislature is telling us can't do it. So we're going to talk about that. But first, before we get into it, I want to show you what I think is the big problem with getting single payer. And we had Shama Sawant on this show, and she told us that if you're a progressive, that the road for your movement will meet a graveyard inside the Democratic Party. Now, when she said that, I thought she was being a little extreme, using big rhetoric. Turns out she's right, because when she got the $15 minimum wage passed in Seattle, she had to fight the Democratic mayor to get it. And now we're trying to get a single payer in California. We're gonna have to fight the Democrats to get it. Dick Gephardt used to be the majority leader for the Democrats. He was a Democratic congressman from Missouri for almost 30 years, up until 2005, from 1977. And he was the majority leader, he was the minority leader, he was the Democratic caucus leader. So he's a leader in the Democratic Party, even ran for president. And so he, in 2005, he quit the Congress. And that same year, he started his own lobbying firm and started working for other lobbying firms. And during the Affordable Care Act debate, he worked for a lobbying firm that killed the public option. That's our Democratic leader. What do you call a guy who works for a lobbyist firm that kills the public option and he's a Democrat? You call that guy a super delegate. That's who he is. So here he works for this health insurance company called Centen. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. But they were having their big to get together at a big fancy hotel in New York City. And he was asked a question. This is Dick Gephardt. If you go to my computer, you see that's him. Dick Gephardt. See what he looks like? The guy's got no eyebrows. Remember, that's the big thing everyone used to say about him, that he had no eyebrows. But now he's really, really rich and he's really, really powerful. And here he was at an investors meeting. And he was caught on a microphone talking about single payer. And listen to the question, by the way. So this is a health insurance guy asking Dick Gephardt, who's now lobbying for health insurance companies, former majority leader in the Congress for the Democrats. Listen to the question he asks him.
Second question, you know, one of the sort of existential threats that I always think about in this business is just a single payer system. And I know we've never gotten close on the Senate floor, but I guess in anyone's mind, I'm curious.
Did you hear how he started that question? He's a guy in the health insurance industry, and he said it's always been an existential threat. What was an existential threat? Let's listen.
Question, you know, one of the sort of existential threats that I always think about in this business is just a single payer system. And I know we've never gotten close on the Senate floor, but I guess in anyone's mind, I'm curious to get anyone's perspective. Is there a scenario where, you know, this just isn't working? Maybe there's another bill in it, you know, the HCA, and that doesn't work as well either. Is there a scenario where we're ever really contemplating a single payer system in the U.S.?
Not in my lifetime. I'm pretty old, so but there is no way you could pass single payer in any intermediate future. And you know, I've given you my editorial comment. This is the greatest healthcare system in the world, bar none. If you got a real problem, you want to be in America. And if you look around the world where they have single payer, I think you will find, yeah, it covers more people, but they do not have the quality and they do not have the innovation that we get because of the involvement of the private sector in our healthcare system. And I think that will defeat single-payer approaches now and in the future.
Hear, hear. Put me down as a Greenwich leader, Gephardt. As usual.
Haley and I are both in the middle on this one.
Well, that is Dick Gephardt agreeing with Haley Barbour on healthcare.
If I'm not mistaken, that was Haley Barbour.
Yeah,
who was the head of the Republican National Committee for a while.
Yes.
So they found something to agree on.
On screwing people out of healthcare.
Right.
Yeah, for money. Right, which is what they're doing. So he's
right. They're both big time lobbyists. Yeah.
So, and Dick Gephardt was super, as far as I can tell, was super progressive when he was in Congress, right? I don't know, super.
He was a labor Democrat.
He was big on labor. Put it that way.
Yes, he definitely was a friend of the people. So when he takes this position, it's pretty shocking and uncomfortable, and that they can giggle about it is even more. I guess it just highlights how corrupt the whole system really is.
So I agree with you, Steph, on that. And so I think that kind of shows you the problem. Even a guy who was a labor Democrat when he was in power, as soon as he gets out, he starts lobbying. He takes all this money. And now he works against the public option. And now he's giggling with Haley Barbour. And he's using right-wing talking points to, because everything he said was not true. They have better outcomes in single payer countries at lower costs. Better outcomes at lower costs. So what he said was not true. And he's saying that for money. That's because he's being bribed to say that. It's hard to get a guy to understand a problem when his paycheck depends on him not understanding it. Mm-hmm. So Dick Gephardt, he's enriching himself while he denies poor people health care. That's a guy with no integrity, as far as I'm concerned. All right, here's Anthony Rendon. Here's Anthony Rendon, who is the assembly leader here in California. He was being asked about single payer after the Senate in California had proposed a bill for single payer. And here's what he said. Now, I didn't put this video together. Someone sent this to me, so I can't take credit for it. But here we go.
Is it time to do single payer in California?
I've been supportive of single payer since before I ever heard of Obamacare. Maybe before I ever heard of Barack Obama. I'm not sure.
Since 2012, Speaker Anthony Rendon has taken at least $150,000 from pharma and health insurers.
I've been supportive of single payer for quite some time. There's a lot in flux at the federal government level, to say the least. The details need to be figured out. And
he's sincere by the way he's looking down at the ground, twiddling his thumbs. You can tell he's not bullshitting at all. This guy is bullshitting right now at a million miles an hour, and he's got tells all over the place. So if you know anything about a guy lying, this guy cannot conceal the fact that he's bullshitting you right now. This is Anthony Rendon. Here we go. Let's go back.
There's a bill that's in the Senate. I think Lara is the author. It's something that I need to look at. I'm philosophically in favor of single payer. This particular bill I need to look at. And also the timing is, there's something, the timing may be a challenge.
Why is that?
Because there's so much flux at the federal government level.
To me, I played that because to me, we all know, everybody in this room, everybody outside this room knows that that's the problem. The problem is that the Democrats are in bed with the pharmaceutical industry and the health insurance lobby, and they take money and they're paid to not understand the problem. Okay, so now brings us to this article. This is from The Intercept, written by our guest here, Dave Dayan. It's entitled, California Single Payer Organizers Are Deceiving Their Supporters. It's Time to Stop. Now, before we get to it, what would you say about Anthony Rendon's little thing there?
Oh, I mean, Anthony Rendon is not really that interested in passing a single payer bill. I think it's pretty clear. And beyond himself, his caucus is moderate to say the least. I mean, this is a caucus that on the same day that Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, the assembly in California, this big blue state, voted down extending the cap and trade system that we have in place right now.
So ostensibly, they're doing right-wing things.
Right. I mean, this is literally at the same time that everyone's like, oh, Trump is a horrible person for voting down the Paris Climate Agreement. That caucus, there are a lot of moderates and conservative Democrats in that caucus, and Anthony Rendon is the leader of that caucus, and he sees his role not necessarily as doing, you know, the bidding of what the public might want, but he's trying to protect the conservative elements of his caucus that don't want to vote on this.
Okay. And the governor too, right? Because Governor Jerry Brown doesn't want to sign it.
There's no question that the governor will never sign, ever sign this.
Okay.
The one guy in the Senate, you know, this passed the Senate, but there was one guy named Steve Glazer who said, well, I'm not voting for this financing. There's no way that I would ever vote for, you know, raising taxes to pay for this. Steve Glazer was Jerry Brown's campaign manager. So, Jerry Brown has already said, where's the money? How do you do this? He's, you know, contradicting right. what he said in 1992. But so the larger point is this is a long climb. And how you understand where to go forward is based on whether you think this is a long climb or not. So that's kind of the preface for this thing that you can beat me up about.
Okay, so it's okay. We're going to disagree, I think, on this article. I know we do, but the reason why I have Dave on is because this article has been a little controversial since it's been printed. It was printed in The Intercept, and a lot of people said it was unfair to the nurses. I was one of those people. So that's why we have Dave here. And Dave's a good guy. And so we don't want to sandbag him, and we don't want to get overly emotional. We want to
do whatever you got to do.
We both want single payer. Dave's for single payer.
I've been for it for well over a decade. You know, I mean, the first time we tried to pass single payer in California was 1992. There was a ballot measure to try to pass single payer in California way back then.
Well, it didn't pass, I'm guessing.
It did not pass. Do you go to the doctor now? Do you have a private insurer? In 2006 and 2008, single payer passed the legislature.
Oh, right.
And Arnold terminated it. So there's been a fight here for a long, long time. And I think that is the background for, I'm tired of losing on this, frankly. I'm tired of the strategies that come up that don't seem to move the ball forward. And here we are in a situation where we have Democrats control 2/3 of the legislature, which means they can do the taxes themselves. They can put it on the ballot themselves.
Supermajority.
Supermajority. There's a Democratic governor now instead of a Republican governor. There is public opinion has moved more in the direction that yes, the federal government or the state government has a role in healthcare. And, you know, we're in a moment where we need to get serious about this. And my view of what is happening right now is that it's not as serious as it needs to be.
Okay, so we're up against a break, our first break. And we're going to find out why Dave hates the nurses in just a second.
Yes, I hate people who heal people. That's literally my modus operandi.
So, you know, I'm just trying to be funny. But
And I'm here, Jimmy, because I love nurses.
Because we all love nurses.
So nurses, pro or con.
Exactly.
The debate next.
So I was trying to tease them.
There you go.
All right, so we're going to come back in just a few minutes. We're going to take a couple minute break. And when we come back, we're going to go through the article with Dave. And if you've read the article, maybe you're interested in this. And if you're interested in single payer, you should definitely be interested in what we're going to talk about coming forward, right? So that's coming up next. And then we're going to have someone to even rebut this article afterwards, right? So someone working with the nurses is going to come on. And you're going to know everything you need to know about single payer, especially what's happening in California right now. After the break, go to tytnetwork.com/join and you become a member. Or if you're already a member, tytnetwork.com/, members? I don't know what the hell you do. What do you do?
Member watch entire show, tyt.com/members live.
Members live. There you go. All right, we'll be right back. Hey everybody, welcome back to Aggressive Progressive. I'm here with Steph Zavarano, the miserable liberal, and the great writer Dave Dayan is here. And we're going to talk about single payer and his controversial article. It's always great to write a controversial article because then people have you on shows and they talk about it. So
it's the only reason I did it. I just wanted to get in the studio. I just want to see what
I know. So Dave, we'd have you in no matter what. I always have. So Dave wrote this article. If you go to my computer, we're going to go through it paragraph by paragraph. Not every one of the paragraphs, but most of them. So go to my computer, please. And here it is. California single payer organizers are deceiving their supporters. It's time to stop. Okay. So in the first paragraph, it says, in the days since California Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon shelved for the years SB 562, which intends to establish a state single payer healthcare system, he's been subject to mass protests and even death threats. Okay, now, when I read that, I thought that was highly prejudicial because everyone's subject to death threats. And that's just a tweet someone tweeted at him.
What, death threats are just common
but
now?
But couldn't you put that in any article? I get a death threat at least two a day.
I think it's clear that Anthony Rendon has been subject to a high degree of opposition as a cause of what he did.
Okay.
And it's very clear that the strategy of the, you know, ringleaders of this, the coalition, is that they're going to go after Rendon personally. That he is the man blocking this thing from happening, right? I mean,
yes.
Is that fair to say?
I think it's fair to say.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm getting across.
Okay.
That, you know, it's
you make him
about Rendon.
You make him sound a little
you
sympathetic.
You think so? I am not sympathetic to Anthony Rendon.
That's
later in
hear.
The piece, I say he's covering for his crappy caucus.
You
do
say that? You do say that. I
did not take it that way. So,
oh, okay.
But anyway, go ahead.
All right, well, that's good to hear. So again, we're going to disagree on this. It's okay if people disagree. I disagree with my wife sometimes. Can you believe that?
I don't believe
it. All right,
well, I believe that she's right and you're wrong, but yeah.
All right, so here's the next one. The bill's chief backers, including the California Nurses Association and the Bernie Sanders-affiliated Our Revolution, angrily point to Rendon as the main roadblock to truly universal health care. All right. They're completely wrong. What's more, they know they're wrong. Bang, boom. They're perfectly aware that SB 562 is a shell bill that cannot become law without a ballot measure approved by voters. Okay, all right. Okay.
Do you want to get into that? Or?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, I think so,
let's
right?
Get into that. So go ahead. So now what you, so right. Why are they completely wrong? And
well, okay. So I come to this thinking that, you know, not all efforts to fight corporate power are created equal, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are good efforts and successful ones, and there are unsuccessful ones. And in something that is so long in coming, we need to have the right strategy for figuring this out. And the key threshold question here is, does this thing require a ballot measure or not? And that changes your whole strategy. If this thing requires a ballot measure, then Anthony Rendon isn't the sole roadblock to this thing. And furthermore, it means there's a long window that you're going to need because you know it's an existential threat, what the guy from Centene Healthcare said, right? So we saw just last year Bernie Sanders backed initiative Prop 61, right?
Here and in California.
Here in California to lower health prescription drug costs, right? And how much did the pharmaceutical industry spend on that initiative?
Let me just guess, $60 million?
Over $100 million they spent, and they beat the thing at the ballot box. I would say that this kind of a measure that would bring a single-payer healthcare system to bear will require $250 million, I would say. A quarter of $1 billion will be spent, pushed in against this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know I am looking up against $250 million that's going to be put against this thing, and I have to go to the ballot to do it, to at least finish off the bill, then what should I spend my time on? Should I spend my time on being personal with Anthony Rendon, or should I spend my time on building a coalition, going to every corner of this state, getting support from every group you can find, getting funding from every group you can find to match them dollar for dollar at the ballot box, and building that movement to actually make sure that you're not completely outgunned in 2 years. Because, by the way, you can only run a ballot measure every 2 years. That we have a new law, and ballot measures aren't on ballots in 2017. They can only be on in 2018,
in
2020.
Even numbered years.
Even numbered years. That's correct. So, it changes the strategy.
So you're saying that, and we're going to get into it, but this, in order to get single payer in California, it's going to require a ballot measure to fund it. And you can't have a ballot.
Well, it's not just to fund it, but yes. But the point is, it's going to require a ballot measure, and we can get into why.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So, okay. And you're saying that instead of advancing a bill without the money needed to fight a ballot measure, that's you're putting the cart before the horse. Is that what you're saying?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. And I have other issues with this as well. Okay. But the issue when we're talking about this part of it, it's. There's two things. Number one, what you just said. Number two, you need to be straight with your supporters. If you're telling your supporters, nope, no problem, all we have to do is get rid of Anthony gosh darn Rendon, and we move forward and we all get single payer. And then, you know, by some miracle, Anthony Rendon says, okay, fine, we'll pass the bill. And they do. And then we don't get it. The people that are doing this hard work, that are out there in the streets, that are out there making phone calls, that are out there talking to neighbors about this, I want to honor their work rather than say, oh, yeah, by the way, we also have to do a ballot measure. Yeah, I didn't tell you that before. That I think you got to be straight with people at the beginning about the road forward on this thing.
Okay. Okay.
Well, can I just say this when I'm listening, because I'm really open to hearing your position on this. But I have to say right now, when you say, you know, you got to be honest with them, I'm feeling like put it on the ballot, let me vote. Don't block it, Rendon. Don't do the heavy lifting for me right now, just because Governor Brown is going to veto it. I think this action by Anthony Rendon outs the Democrats as corporatists in the state of California.
But is it Anthony Rendon, or is it the guys in the Senate that passed this thing along that they knew had no idea, no chance of moving forward? Is it the guys in the Senate who want to accede to higher office? Ricardo Lara, who's the co-author of this thing, mm-hmm. is running for insurance commissioner. His best friend is Kelvin De Leon, the head of the state Senate. They put a bill together that they didn't think really, it doesn't have a lot of the things that it would have to be an actual piece of legislation that would be viable. And they kicked it to the assembly saying, all right, okay, you deal with it, you kill it, and I get the glory. So I don't think that it's just about Anthony Rendon here.
Right.
It's about the guys in the Senate who were kind of disingenuous about sending this thing forward. It's kind of like throwing a baby into traffic, what they did with this bill.
So you're saying that they proposed a flawed bill, and that Anthony Rendon had no choice but to do what he did?
I'm saying that it made it much easier for Anthony Rendon to do
it. It did make it easier for him to do
it. Because he could say, oh, it's an incomplete bill. So we're gonna put pause on it, and we're gonna put a hold on it.
When he says that. I mean, it's not bullshit in the sense that it's true. It is true.
Right.
But
why is it an incomplete bill? And that's where you have to go back to the history here.
Okay.
So 10 years ago, Sheila Kuehl, mm-hmm. who is now an LA County supervisor, right. She used to be Zelda on Dobie Gillis as a mm-hmm. kid. And at that time, she was in the state Senate. She put together a single payer bill. It was called SB 840 at that time. And at that time, she answered every question you would ever have about how a single payer system would work, including how it would save money, how mm-hmm. it would improve the delivery system. She included money in that bill to get more health professionals here, because if everybody's covered, more people are going to use healthcare, and you have to figure out, well, we need more doctors and nurses and other health professionals to handle the more people that are going to be using healthcare. She added all this stuff in the bill and created a really viable process. And that was at a time, I mean, we knew Schwarzenegger was going to veto the bill, but what we also knew is that we had a chance to make sure that we created something that was serious, that you couldn't laugh at single payer anymore. You couldn't call it that crazy thing that happens in overseas. Right. She said, here's a viable process, and I've answered all the questions you would ever want about a single payer system. Here's the bill. And then they blocked it, and the movement moves forward. This bill has none of that. It creates a board, an unelected board, that would be appointed by various members, the governor and various members of the legislature, to figure out all the questions that Sheila Kuehl already figured out. And I'm puzzled as to why you would do it that way. First of all, it means that when you're creating the actual single payer system, people who are appointed and not elected by the people are going to be making those key decisions. Much like when we passed that Dodd-Frank thing.
Yes.
You know, they didn't write a bill. They said, hey, regulators, you go write a bill. And then the regulators got in a room with the banking industry, and they wrote regulations that were very favorable to the banking industry. I'm not saying that would happen from this single payer bill, but I'm saying that why wouldn't you set into law, this is how we're going to do this. This is how this is going to work. This is how we're going to create a dispute resolution system. This is how we're going to fight fraud. This is how we're going to do all these things.
So, no, I agree with you on that. Like, but here's what I say is that so Anthony Rendon gives lip service to single payer. He says, I'm for single payer. I'm like, you're the leader in this goddamn assembly. You didn't know that they were getting ready for a bill in the Senate. Why didn't you introduce your own bill in the assembly? What are you doing? Where's your bill? He said, I thought about this. I've been for single payer since before I even heard Obamacare.
Right.
So then you give this a lot of thought because you're a guy in a position of power. Right. And I'm sure you got together with Jerry Brown. And I'm sure you figured out how we're going to do this single payer. Except you didn't, because you're not really for it. That's what I think. And I think it's obvious he's not really for it. Because if you're really for single payer, then you've thought about how you're going to fund it and what kind of bill you're going to introduce. And if you haven't thought about how you're going to fund it or what kind of bill you're going to introduce, and you're the leader, you're not really for it.
Right. And I'm not disagreeing with you on that point. But what I'm saying is the process as it's happened has made it really easy for Anthony Rendon to sort of take the high road.
Yes, that is correct. But here's where I would disagree with you. We agree on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I disagree that in this article, that you put the onus on the nurses instead of the onus on Jerry Brown, the people in the Senate, and Anthony Rendon.
Right.
Why did they introduce such a shitty bill? Maybe it's because the Democrats are bought. I think that's the problem. And I agree with you that this bill isn't as good as that other bill, that's 840.
Right.
And the at the same time, there's one more problem, right?
Okay.
So there's the Proposition 98.
Yes, we can get into that.
So the problem with Proposition, let's go through it this way.
Okay.
Rather than committing to raising the millions of dollars that would be needed to overcome special interests and pass that initiative, they would apparently rather deceive their supporters, hiding the realities of California's woeful political structure in favor of a morality play designed to advance careers and aggrandize power. Now, do you mean that?
Just to note, I'm a cranky guy.
Okay.
All right.
Let's be honest.
That's really helpful.
Right? So let that be the prior on this. But my point in saying that is that, yes, I sort of take as a given that, yes, Jerry Brown is philosophically opposed to a single payer system. Anthony Rendon is covering for his caucus, and maybe he doesn't really care about this bill at all. My prior is that the Senate is just wants to get this off their plate and bathe in the glory of people like you and supporters of single payer healthcare, saying that they fought the good fight when they kind of didn't because of the process that they put forward. But you also need leadership. I mean, CNA was the bill sponsor. They built the coalition to get this thing passed. And they said to everybody out there who was working so hard to make this a reality, we have to go through this process, and we are the ones who are going to make this a reality. So, you know, because they have the right enemies, but to say that they're immune from criticism because of that, I don't agree with.
No, they're not immune from criticism, and I get that bill was flawed. Oh, we got a break.
I think they are immune from criticism because I think they got a shot for it. Just wanted to be helpful. They're the nurses.
Okay, thank you. So, but let me just ask real quick. When you say, can you go to my computer for a second? When you say it is
advanced careers, I'm talking about the Senate leadership. I'm talking about Ricardo Lara, who wants to be insurance commissioner. Tony Atkins, the other co-author, who wants to be the head of the Senate.
I thought you meant those climber nurses.
Yes, see, that's the thing. We get a little miscued on that one because it sounds like it's an indictment about the nurses and what they didn't fulfill.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, they've been at this for a long, long time. And we should be in a place, based on public opinion, based on numbers in the Senate, where we're closer today than we were 10 years ago. And we should have a broader coalition today than we did 10 years ago. And we have to ask ourselves, what's going on? And you know, you can't fire the players, so you got to fire the manager, right? I mean, like... That's the premise I'm taking.
Okay, so can you stick around? Because we got more to talk about, right? So we got to take a break, but you can stick around.
Yeah, for a little bit.
Okay, so we'll be right back with more of this conversation, and we're going to get to the bottom of this. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Aggressive Progressives. We're here with the Miserable Liberal and Dave Dayan, who's wrote a great article in The Intercept that we're talking about right now. And we're talking about, we left you off, we're talking about single payer and a thing called Prop 98 in California. Dave, can you tell people what Prop 98 is?
Sure. So everybody, or a lot of people in California know what Prop 13 is, right?
Yes.
So Prop 13 was a thing that slashed property taxes. It was these, you know, conservatives in the suburbs who didn't want to pay property taxes anymore. And so they slashed these things and it made it very hard for the state to meet its budget. And so about a decade later, the Teachers Association said, well, we're going to protect education. So they created this thing called Prop 98. And Prop 98 installs a very complex formula on the budget. Literally, only one person actually knows how to apply Prop 98. And he died 2 years ago. So like we're kind of in trouble here in California. But in general terms, it says 40 to 50% of all general fund spending has to go to education. And that's both K through 12 and community colleges. And if you think about that, if you're taking the healthcare system and putting it on the budget, in other words, the state is running the healthcare system now, all the money that you raise to go to that, half of it has to go to education.
Because of Prop 98.
Yes, because of this silly straitjacket on budgeting that we've put together for ourselves from this experiment with direct democracy that we've been doing.
Yes.
So the only way around that is at the ballot. And, you know, you have a slide here that says some people say you can suspend Prop 98 with a two-thirds vote. You'd have to do it every year, and you'd have to say, and here's our plan to raise the money to the level from before we suspended it in the budget. So every year you'd have to say, now it's a 50% tax, now it's a 70% tax, because every year you'd be underneath what you were supposed to be under the Prop 98 regime. So it's a problem, and you have to go to the budget. Now, you're going to have Michael Leidy on, and he's going to say that's an assumption and not a fact, which is what he said in my article when he responded. I have the co-author of the bill, Ricardo Lara, on tape saying, yes, you have to go to the ballot. Most of the coalition members have said, yes, you're going to have to go to the ballot eventually. It's an important question. And if Michael Leidy has a way that we can get around this, then he should tell people, because it would save us $200 million.
Right.
We wouldn't have to deal with this stuff of running a ballot measure. It's a very important question. I personally don't see a way around it. And if there is a way around it, show us.
So let's go to, this will explain it a little bit more. Go to my computer, please. Yeah, self-appointed experts have countered that the state can suspend Prop 98 with a two-thirds vote of the legislature. Remember, Democrats make up two-thirds of the legislature. They have a supermajority. This has been done twice in the past. So they've done this twice in the past during downturns in the economy. But the suspension can last for only a single year. It would have to be renewed annually to keep single payer going. Okay, so come back to me for that. Mm-hmm. So I read that and I'm like, okay, let's do it. Let's pass the bill. Let's have a 2/3 vote to suspend Prop 98, which means mm-hmm. that so we don't have to worry about overspending on education to make sure we have single payer. And then next year, we vote it again. Or maybe next year, we have time to put it on the ballot. Or maybe we wait till 2020 and we just keep. So I don't understand why that's such a barrier to have them vote every year.
It's the it's the next thing in that sentence. It's the next sentence that makes it a
more important. Okay, go back. More important. Come back to my computer, please. More important, as the California Budget and Policy Center explains, after any suspension, quote, the state must increase Prop 98 funding over time to the level that it would have reached absent the suspension.
In other words, you can say we'll suspend it, and that $100 billion we don't have to raise.
Right now,
we don't have to raise that right now. But we have to show you in future years we got to raise that $100 billion. And then if you do it the second year, now it's $200 billion.
Right.
And then the next year it'd be $300 billion.
So you're saying suspending that with a 2/3 vote is not a panacea because you got this other part of the bill. I mean, you still have to raise the money.
You still have to eventually raise the money. Number one, and number two, someone's going to sue you if you every year you say. We're suspending it. Some lawyer out there is going to say you're violating Prop 98 in spirit, and I'm going to get a judge to tell you you're wrong. So,
okay.
It's a legal question. The fact that you must show where the money comes from in future years, it's problematic.
It's not legally.
It's not financially, and it's not politically sustainable because you're now telling 2/3 of the legislature to vote effectively for the biggest tax increase in the history of California every year, right? Because you have to backfill to put in that money. $100 billion, $200 billion, $300 billion.
I hear what you're saying because of Prop 98.
Right.
But let's say if they passed it, couldn't we put it on the ballot in 2018, right? That's a even year.
It's certainly, the question is, have you done the work to get that thing on the ballot right now?
So here's the only problem I have when you say that, is that you are correct. Since the CNA are the sponsors of the bill, we have to, you know, hold them accountable, what have you. But they're not elected officials.
No.
And people who are elected officials, I think, have much more of a commitment or obligation to fulfill their promises, which their promises, Anthony Rendon said he's for single payer, and he's not doing anything to help it happen. In fact, he's doing everything to kill it. And Jerry Brown, it's going to expose him for being against single payer. So
I have no problem with calling out legislators for and holding them accountable.
Okay.
I've done it for most of my career.
I know you have.
In writing.
I know you have.
Under no circumstances am I trying to defend or protect people like Anthony Rendon. They should be held accountable. But we need a strategy that's going to work. To get around this. And I feel like
to get around Anthony Rendon or
to get around Anthony Rendon, to get around Prop 98, to get around everything.
Okay. Do you have that strategy?
And I feel like if Anthony Rendon is saying I can't pass this bill because it's incomplete, what you do is you complete it. There are apparently 17 amendments that are out there that Anthony Rendon or that CNA has. They have these amendments. You can go back to the Senate and create a bill that includes all the amendments. Why weren't they in there in the first place is my first question, because why would you send over this thing and then say we're going to fix it? It's no fair. Anthony Rendon isn't letting us fix this thing that we didn't give, that we was flawed in the first place that we sent over. That's problematic to me. But you can do this out in public. If there are these 17 amendments, show us the amendments. Prove to Anthony Rendon, don't give him an out. Prove to him, now we have a complete bill. All you have to do is bring it up for a vote and we'll add this stuff in and we're ready. If you're saying he's blocking us from holding hearings, hold hearings. Mm-hmm. Bring the legislators who agree with that we should put a single payer system together and put them in Rendon's district and hold a hearing, hold a field hearing on it. Put them all up and down the state. This would further the process.
Okay.
There are plenty of things you can do. Anthony Rendon may have shelved this bill temporarily, but he did not block Californians from talking about single payer. I mean, we can still do that, and we can still build the coalition for the eventuality of a ballot measure at the same time that you're putting pressure on the assembly speaker to finally allow a vote. I feel like the all eggs in one basket strategy of just going personally at Anthony Rendon is not going to get you where you want to be.
Dave, everything you're saying here sounds so sensible and level-headed.
Right?
Everything
it
you're
does.
Saying. I guess people had a problem. I don't want to tone police anyone. You know, I'm the last guy to do that.
I think you're doing
it. I'm doing it.
I think you're doing it.
I guess I am. So it seemed like, for lack of better words, it seemed like you were, instead of, you could have been more constructive in a sense. Who am I to tell you how to write, right? I'm an asshole. I don't know what I'm doing. But I feel that, you know, my audience. Anyway, I just, it upset me when I read this.
I mean, one thing I will say, and I said this in my response, because CNA responded and then I responded.
Right.
And what I said in my response and what I conceded is that I should have done a better job of distinguishing between the people who are doing the hard work, who are out there in the streets, who are doing the die-ins and who are doing you know, everything to try to get what they feel they need in this state, what we all feel we need in this state, and the people setting the strategy at the top. And I don't want, as a single payer supporter, I don't want the work that's being done to be done in vain.
Okay.
And healthcare is a very emotional issue. People really put their heart and soul into it. And I share that sentiment. I think it's an incredibly important issue. And when I see what I feel like I've seen, which is all of a sudden the bill gets worse. All of a sudden there's mixed messages over whether you need to go to the ballot or not. I think that's a problem. I can write the same story about Anthony Rendon and about Jerry Brown till the cows come home, and I have and I will. Okay. But you have to hold people who put themselves out there in a leadership position and say, I'm going to be the one to get this done. Well, you know, then you have to have the strategy to do that, and I saw problems with it.
Okay. I think seeing problem with the strategy and calling nurses liars are two different things.
Well, I would like to get, and I know you're going to be talking to the head of CNA right now.
Right.
And I think we need some clarity. I think people who are supportive of this need some clarity. Why did the bill change?
Why isn't it still 840?
Why isn't it still 840?
I'll ask him.
Why aren't these amendments public? If you have an idea for making single payer not dependent on the ballot, why can't we see it? Why are you being vague about that? There are a lot of questions here, and so those are the kinds of things I'd like to see.
And you know, like nurses though.
They've always treated me well when I've been sick.
And you're for people who are for single payer.
I am certainly the point is that this is we all have the same goal, right?
Single payer.
We have a goal and we want to make sure we can get there. And you need passion and you need strategy. And you can't have one without the other. And we've been at this for a long time in California, and California can set that model. We're big enough. We have the resources. We have the ability to set that model for the nation. So this is important stuff. And it can't be left to this the kind of strangeness that I see in this process we can't have a situation where we set the thing back.
So you're afraid that if we don't do this in a correct way, that it will then put us back.
Absolutely.
One step forward, three steps back.
History of single payer in America is a history of failure.
Yeah.
Vermont, they passed it through their legislature. Mm-hmm. Then when they found out what the taxes would be, they scrapped the whole darn thing. We've had bills, 1992, we had a single payer bill that didn't pass on the ballot in California. Just last year, Colorado had a single payer bill that got crushed at the ballot box amid massive spending from the industry.
And an influx of Democrats that went to that state to lobby against it.
That's true too. So, you know, the legacy of failure at some point has to end, because if it doesn't end, then every time we have a failure like this, it makes people think we're not going to be able to break through the very entrenched power structure that is protecting private, you know, for-profit healthcare. And so, you know, it's people got mad at me because in one point I at the end, well, people got mad at me for a lot of reasons. But at one point at the end of my rebuttal, I said, you know, this has to be perfect. And people were like, well, you just want a perfect bill, blah, 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 blah. What I was saying is that this process, we have to get it right, because we're not going to have this many more opportunities to try to get this done. Every time there's a loss on single payer, it becomes more and more remote. And at some point, we have to make some progress here. And you know, whether it's this or whether it's that the thing that was in Nevada with the Medicaid for All mm-hmm. bill, or whether it's whatever it is, we got to make some progress here and get us to the healthcare for all situation that we need to be in.
So that line at the end of your article where the bill needs to be perfect.
I didn't say the bill needs to be perfect. I said the situation needs to be perfect. I said the process needs to be. And what I meant was that there are too many roadblocks here. We've got $250 million from the industry breathing down our neck, right? We can't have these questions of whether the ballot thing is right or not. We can't have a bill that doesn't answer the key questions within it. We can't have amendments that we are not allowed to see. That's what I mean by perfect. Like, there are too many obstructions. There are too many people who are going to get in our way of this, what we want, that for us to half-ass this thing.
Well, you are certainly explaining it a lot better today. It's for my liking. The way you put it in this article was so off-putting to me. But the way you're putting it today, I understand what you're saying. And that it just seemed, maybe you were in a cranky mood, right?
I was coming back from vacation, to be honest. Okay.
All right, so you're in a cranky mood. Hey, Dave, I can give everybody.
You know, I think we all get frustrated.
Yes.
And I've been frustrated with a process that I feel like is not serving the people that are out there working extremely hard for this goal. And we need to honor the people who are out there working to do this. And if this shook it up, and if this created a debate and a conversation where we're going to have a better process in the end, then it was good for me to be cranky.
Well,
because
it certainly,
you know,
informed
it's
me.
An important conversation that we need to have. You need to be passionate and you need to know what the road ahead is. And so, you know, I'll take the bullet if it means that we move this debate forward.
All right, Dave, thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot.
And I appreciate, I hope you felt I treated you fairly and you got everything you wanted to say.
You're more than fair, you're the most fair person I know.
And that's
when Dick Gephardt was in this chair, you were super fair to him. And, you know, that's just the way you are.
Dave Dayan, check out his writing. He's writing everywhere at The Intercept right now. He's got a great book called Chain of Title. It's award-winning, and it tells you everything you need to know about the mortgage crisis. So thanks for coming in, Dave, and we'll see you next time. We'll be right back with a spokesperson from the CNA. Everybody, welcome back to The Aggressive Progressives. I'm here with the Miserable Liberal, and we have a new guest. Ron Placone is here, ladies and gentlemen.
Howdy,
hey, Ron,
howdy,
how are
everybody.
You?
Good, Jimmy.
Yay.
Good.
Now, as promised, we had a little technical problem, but we got it fixed, so that's why our break was a little longer. But as promised, we have the Director of Public Policy from the CNA. It's Michael Leidy is with us. Michael, can you hear me?
Hi, Jimmy. It's Michael Leidy.
There it is. All right, we got it. All right, fantastic. Hey, Michael, I'm so glad to have you on. Now, I don't know how much of the conversation you heard with Dave Dayan, who wrote that article in The Intercept, and it sounded to me like he was just upset that the CNA didn't put together a better bill and that's really risking the chances for single-payer passing because you put together such a bad bill. What do you have to say to that?
Oh, I think he completely for the bill. And essentially, he's a self-appointed tribune of the one true path, and I just don't think it's relevant. The bill is very solid. It's based on a piece of legislation that has passed the New York Assembly a couple times. We've worked from that as a to answer the question about why it's not SB 840. We're updating it in relation to the Affordable Care Act, and we've updated it further to be specific to California code and processes. What we were doing through the legislative process was precisely completing the bill because that's the only way to enact it. Now, there are issues we acknowledge around Prop 98 and the GAN limit and so forth, but the best way to deal with those is through the legislative process because you vet opinions and ultimately the arbiter for passing legislation is legislative council and they rule on the particulars of the language and how it meets various requirements, constitutional and otherwise. So if Speaker Rendon had let that process continue, then we would have heard amendments, discussed those amendments at Health Committee. We then would have moved on to the Appropriations Committee where the financing would have been inserted and discussed, debated, voted on. And we would also, during that process, have gotten opinions from legislative counsel, from the Legislative Analyst Office, and from the Department of Finance. And so the notion, as Dave puts out, that you're going to just go to the ballot lets the legislators off the hook. Why would they pass a bill, Jimmy, if they just know that we're going to go to the ballot? In fact, that's what Speaker Rendon said. You guys just forget about it, go to the ballot. Well, the fact is, I think Democrats, Republicans, Independents are tired of these legislators passing the buck, not doing their jobs. And in this case, they have a two-thirds majority of Democrats. Mm-hmm. They have a Democratic governor. There is a fierce urgency of now. I'm glad people like Dave can wait and say, yeah, well, let's just let this play out.
Oh, we're having some.
There is an problem.
So, why do you think? So, if Dave Dayan, which he is for single payer, and why do you think he would take that take on this issue? That seems so. It appears to me that Anthony Rendon is stopping the bill from being completed. Instead of trying to complete the bill, like I said, if he's really for single payer and he's the leader in the assembly, don't you think he would know how to fix this? Don't you think he would have thought about this? Don't you think he would have a plan in his back pocket? Don't you think he would have talked with people in the Senate and talked with the governor and they would have a plan already? But he doesn't have any of those things. So it's obvious to me that he's not really for it. And the real problem is him and not the nurses. That's what my whole point was.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, he's the leader of the assembly. He sets the rules. He could move the bill today if he wanted to. And the fact is that he's covering for Democrats who are dependent on health insurance industry money and the donors themselves who are major funders of the leadership PAC that Speaker Rendon controls, as well as those consultants in Sacramento who fund these corporate Democrats based upon these industry contributions. So it's the nexus that you often talk about. And in fact, even a Nobel Prize winning economist, Angus Deaton, calls healthcare, the current system, the worst example of crony capitalism. So the truth is that we could have a bill. We could, and the speaker knew we were addressing all his concerns, and yet he killed this process. And when Dave says, the bill can continue, the organizing can continue, well, of course it can, but only the legislature can legislate, and that's what people need, particularly in the face of these GOP threats to our health care. So there is high anxiety, and there's a high demand, and the responsibility is Speaker Rendon's. To call the nurses who are out there, who Dave champions as, we've got to honor the heroes of this movement, well, the nurses are on the front lines. The nurses are the ones pushing this bill along with their allies. And he's called the nurses deceptive and not leveling with people. Well, in fact, that's exactly what we're doing. We're calling people's attention to the crisis in healthcare that Speaker Rendon is not addressing.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for the CNA, believe me, Rendon would not be pushing a bill for single payer. There would not be a bill. He wouldn't be fixing this. Jerry Brown wouldn't be taking the reins on single payer because the nurses let us down. No, the only reason we're even goddamn talking about this is because the nurses are doing something about it.
So, well, thank you. I would a degree.
Yes.
And the notion somehow that it's our fault is, we've got to understand that the impact of this way.
Oh, he's got a tough internet connection, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Michael, your Skype connection is a little choppy. You were coming in and out. It's unfortunate because you have a lot of great stuff to say. Ron Placone is here with us, and he has a question for you.
So I wanted to know in the response that Mr. Leidy wrote to Dave, he said, his own staff, and this is referring to Rendon, his own staff had told us to focus on policy rather than financing, which we were doing. And then he says the speaker talks of sending the bill back to the Senate, but under the rules, he knows it can only be amended in the assembly now. And I was wondering if Mr. Leidy could speak to that experience, what that process was like, what messages they were getting from Mr. Rendon's staff.
So what we would say in response is that the Health Committee of the Assembly is the only committee of jurisdiction, or another policy committee, but in this case, Health is the committee of policy committee with jurisdiction, can amend a bill at this point. That's why it sits in rules, and then rules refers it to the Health Committee where amendments can happen. There's no process in the regular order to send a bill back to the Senate. It's past the Senate. And so when we were talking with Speaker Rendon's staff, they were saying, look, we'll get to the financing, but let's focus, let's go back to the policy, hone it, make it clear how we're going to guarantee health care, how we're going to implement a program to cover all Californians, address the issues around payment methodology and other aspects of the policy. And so we had an extensive discussion, and eventually we did submit on Friday before Speaker Rendon stalled the bill, we did submit those amendments to Senator Lara, who under the process is the author, and so he controls the amendments. He accepts, he changes, it's his call. So we were working and are working with his office on those. And so the irony is Speaker Rendon has had one meeting with us. That was back in February. And he never expressed support for the bill. He basically said, well, I'm sort of open to the conversation, but it creates a problem for us politically, yada, yada, yada. And that was the last we heard from him directly. We tried to meet with him many times. He didn't even tell us he was stalling the bill. We heard about that from the media. So there's a lack of good faith, and as you say, Jimmy, a lack of commitment to this issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's worse than a lack of commitment. It's a transparent lack of interest in the bill. If Anthony Rendon was actually interested in single payer, that means he would think about it and he would plan for how he was going to implement it once he got power. And he got power and he had zero plan. And in fact, he's pointing the finger at everybody else. Hey, they gave me a screwed up bill. They won't do this. They don't know how it's working. And so it's like he's the guy in charge. He doesn't know how anything works. Which is
exactly
that is, and you and I both know that's malarkey, right? So, and the problem I had with Dave's article was that he put all the focus on everyone else who doesn't have power. The people who are in power are the people who I like to hold their feet to the fire. The nurses aren't elected. They don't have power. They're just an organization that's trying to influence power, right? So the people with the power are the people we should hold their feet to the fire. So that's my big problem with that bill. Now, let me ask you about Proposition 98. So Dave brought up a lot of things with the problems with Proposition 98 and that they would have to vote every year to suspend Prop 98. Well, I think you'd only have to do it once because then next year we could get rid of Prop 98 at the ballot box. Am I correct?
Well, no, we don't want to get rid of Prop 98, but Dave is just creating this scenario where we fall under the requirement of Prop 98 that 40 to 50% of the revenue we raise has to go to education. We are not going to fall under that requirement. That scenario is not going to happen. He is making that up. It is, of course, theoretically possible, but it would make no sense to do single payer under those circumstances. So that's what we're vetting through the legislative process. And ultimately, legislative council decides whether we have written a bill that can avoid the Prop 98 requirements. And if they render opinion in our favor, we're golden. That's who matters in this case, in this particular instance about enacting legislation. Their opinion matters. Secondly, you can go to the you can go to state court to litigate the question if you're not convinced that Ledge Counsel is right. But that's how it gets adjudicated. And really, that's the exact process that Speaker Rendon stymied in.
Michael, if you can hear me, I do have a question. You know, I'm a native Californian, and I really want to know, what can I do? I've heard all the things that aren't working, but I want to know really what can I do to help this cause move forward?
Is corporate, it is not too late, believe it or not, for Speaker Rendon to still move this bill. And so even though Dave disagrees with us, we believe he is the appropriate person to lobby and to call and to email and to join us in a demonstration. We're going back. Dave says, oh, we gotta do hearings. Well, guess what? We're doing a hearing on Tuesday, July 11th in Sacramento. We call it the People's Assembly Health Committee hearing because the official one is that day, and they're not letting us present SB 562. So we're going to present SB 562 with the people and hear testimony. And that's the other thing that folks can do is they can go to the healthyca.org website. Tell us your story. Tell us about healthcare denied by insurance company. Tell us about the medical expenses that the insurance company in this system has imposed on you. And then make sure that Speaker Rendon and your local assembly member knows you want the bill moved and you want it now.
So, you know, whenever people say, well, how are you going to pay for that bill? Mm-hmm. I always say, yeah, how are we going to afford cheaper drugs and medicine?
Exactly. That's right. Can we get comprehensive benefits and actually save workers and middle class and businesses millions of dollars?
And what people don't realize, and I think is really important, is that the state of California already pays 70% of the medical bills in California. So we're not going from a zero to 100%. We're going from 70% to 100%, which is a much different project, isn't it?
Yes, thank you very much. I'm glad you've read these reports and the studies that have come out that we did, Peary, that was done on the bill, showed it precisely that we can save quite a bit of money. In the case of a middle-class family, they can save up to 9% of their income. That's like getting a 9% raise. Businesses, medium-sized businesses save 6%. Small businesses can save 22% under our financing proposal of their total payroll. So these savings are huge, and they get increased benefits, dental, vision. But most importantly, no insurance company premiums, deductibles, or copays. No more out-of-pocket expenses. Complete choice of provider. Really, doctors and nurses in charge of the system with the insurance company bureaucrats gone. This is the possibility. So I think that sounds pretty good to me. I may not be perfect, but I think it sounds pretty good.
That sounds pretty good. It sounds better than the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, the idea, I brought it up with Dave very briefly about when he said the process needed to be perfect. Right. And I've never seen a legislative process that was perfect. I don't know. It's never happened. The Affordable Care Act process was completely flawed. The bill's completely flawed. The act is completely flawed. This is why we're here still, because of that kind of stuff. So listen, Michael, I really appreciate you taking time, and I hope you can make it into the studio sometime. And we wish you all the luck, obviously, in fighting this and fighting against Speaker Rendon. And so good luck to you, and thanks for taking time out for us. All right, so right at the right time, his Skype froze right at the right time.
It was great.
So that's our show, and I just want to say, Paul Ron, what did you? Now you sat there and you watched my conversation with Dave. Now I know Dave, and I know he's a good guy. So maybe I wasn't hard enough on him. Maybe I gave him too much time. I don't know if I did it the right way, but. I liked what he was saying today. I didn't like what he wrote in his article.
I mean, his tone on Mike was much different than how he came across in the article and the types of points he was making. And I understand his perspective of, we've been fighting this fight for a long time. The establishment has been against us, and they're going to continue to be. Let's not screw this up again, because we got 70% of voters behind us this time. I totally get that perspective. On the other hand, hearing Mr. Leidy speak, I think it's very apparent that they crossed their T's and dotted their I's better than Dave is giving them credit for.
Yes.
And I also feel like Rendon is a bigger roadblock than Dave is giving it credit for, because he pretty much just shelved this thing. And I would argue that he misled the nurses in the first place. Oh, focus on policy. Don't worry about the finance. Oh, where's the financing? Shelved.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
That's misleading.
Yes, it seemed like, again, I don't want to, we had him here, so I don't want to, argue, debate him when he's not here, but it did seem like he had it reversed, that the villains in this argument were somehow the nurses, because they weren't putting forward a perfect bill, and not the legislators who are in charge of putting together a bill. That's their freaking job. It's not the nurses' job to do that, right? So if you don't like the bill the nurses are putting forward, Rendon, then you put forward a better freaking bill. But it's not putting together a better freaking bill, because we all know, because the problem isn't the goddamn nurses. The problem is Rendon and the fucking lobbyist money. That's the problem. And that's really what I wanted to say, because that's clear. That's why I played the videotape at the beginning of Rendon obviously bullshitting, obviously twiddling his thumbs and looking at the ground, because he knows he's bullshitting. That's why I played the majority leader, Dick Gephardt, at the top. That's a guy who was a Democrat in the Congress for 30 years. He gets out and he immediately works against the public option, and you heard him sound just like a health insurance lobbyist on the tape at the beginning of the show. So, Steph, what do you have to say?
I just was, as I sat here, and I really did appreciate that Michael Lightly, encouraged us to. I thought it was a done deal that I shouldn't call Rendon's office any longer. And it's like, okay, I need to keep calling Rendon's office.
I still haven't been able to get through. I mean, I've gotten just a full voicemail. You've gotten through.
I've gotten through. I've gotten through. We've gotten hung up on.
That's right.
We've called Rendon's office.
We had to call Sacramento.
We had to call Sacramento to get someone to take our call, because his local office, they would. Hello, I'm like, hi, this is Jimmy Dore from the Young Turks. Who am I speaking with? This is Carol. What's your last name? What do you want to know for? I don't know, because I'm a reporter doing a goddamn news story, and I'd like to get your name for it because you work for the congressman? What the F? I talked to a person, I don't know who, I didn't ask. Is that why you want me to do my news story? I talked to somebody at the office, I don't know who, could have been anybody. Secretary, could have been an assistant, I don't know. So anyway.
And I plan on going Tuesday on Wilshire to do that. I want to see what they have to say, and I want to see what people are speaking about regarding the health issue. Yes.
And tomorrow there's a thing too. Lauren Steiner is putting together. I don't have it handy, but we have to wrap it up. So I don't know. I hope you enjoyed this show, because this isn't our usual show. We don't usually spend a whole one topic for a whole show. We're not Rachel Maddow, but. That's what happened today. I thought we were going to have this wrapped up in 30 minutes. Honest to God. I thought we were going to have boom, boom. I have a whole show ready to go.
Go figure.
Do you know I have a whole show ready to go? But that's it. So let me thank Dave Dayan for stopping by and sharing his perspective. I liked his perspective today, not so much in that article. I also want to thank you to Michael Lighty for stopping by and filling us in. I want to thank the nurses. I want to thank Roseanne DeMauro for doing her part.
Yes.
I want to thank the nurses, the CNA. I want to thank Ron Placone, Steph Zamorano, and the crew here at the Young Turks. Thanks to everybody for making this happen and making sure that Skype got hooked up. That was fantastic. So thanks for watching The Aggressive Progressives. Thanks for supporting independent media. Now's the time. It's more than ever. And they're getting scared of us. They're getting scared of us, because I know it.